You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm a staff editor at IndyCornrows.com and one of the co-hosts of the Locked On Pacers podcast. Second day in a row getting me on the solo show. Hopefully a little more excited me today. It's just easier to do these podcasts when the team plays a game or when there's been games that actually, you know, influence the way I talk. You know, I love doing player previews, but the back of the roster, UCLA guys, which I did, which was Leaf, EK, and Aaron Holiday. It's just easier to talk about games and action. Even if it's preseason games, it's easier to talk about. On today's podcast, I'm going to just do that. I'm going to break down the Pacers' last preseason game, look forward to what that means for the season, if it has any impact. If you already know my view on the preseason, you'll hear that one more time, but look for that. And I'm going to end the show on a mailbag question about Jimmy Butler that I got from one of our fans while I was watching the game. I saw it, and I'm like, why not? Let's answer that right now. We're still in off-season mode, theoretically. We're not quite in full-season mode, so we have time to do all kinds of things like that. Later this week, so the last day is Thursday, the last day of the week, we'll have our last player preview with the back-end guys from Tony. The next week, Tony and I will be back on Monday for our weekly show. Then we're on Tuesday, I think we're going to have a season kind of preview for the division with Locked On Pistons host Matt Schlock. That one's a pretty good one. I think Tony's doing that one. Wednesday, we'll preview, obviously, the Pacers' first biggest game, which is 6 days away. And then we'll get into full-season mode, 5 days a week, Pacer previews of games, post breakdown of the past games, previews of upcoming weeks, all kind of stuff like that. So that will be the rest of the year, basically, starting October 17th and what, rolling all the way through till hopefully mid-May. If we're lucky, you know, a week here and there, we'll maybe have a wet rest like the All-Star break. But, you know, we're hoping it goes to mid-May at the earliest, maybe June if we're really, really lucky. Let's take a quick break. Let's get to this podcast. It was a pretty poor performance out of the Pacers in the preseason, the last preseason game today. So they finished preseason 2-2, all four games on the road. I believe there was a concert series in Banker's Life this week. It's why they couldn't play him at home. Sabonis, again, was probably the best player on the team. Maybe him or Thad Young. Sabonis had 13-9 on 6 of 11 shooting. He continues to have a strong preseason. Didn't quite get the double-double he's gotten the last three games, but he still had the best preseason of any player. In terms of every other player, Turner, Collison, Bogdanovich, and all the people really all struggled from the field. Did not play so well. Same with McDermott. Really, McDermott just didn't have any impact. It felt like at times he had a couple of plays. They set him up on a nice screen at the top with the key to get him open for a three. But really just a poor performance from this Pacer team to end the regular season. Luckily, it has absolutely no meaning on the season. And I think it will have absolutely zero impact on how they play this season. I think this is just the last game. The team is ready to get there. None of this should really matter. In terms of energy and things I kind of liked, I like Sabonis, but I like the overall energy. Vic was flying around. He made a little too many risks on defense. I thought sometimes, you know, flying past Levine at times and flying past Holiday. But overall, I like Vic's energy. He played 29 minutes, which is kind of weird for, you know, him and Thad. Thad to play 29 makes a little more sense because of the injury and hasn't played at all. But overall, you know, it just wasn't a great game for this team. A few things I liked from this game was, one, I again liked Aaron Holiday's shooting. I think he recovered nicely from really not playing in games the first or third game, but pretty good second game, has recovered this game. He was really the best player in terms of plus-minus on the court, with a +8 when he was on the floor. 15 points, 3 of 4 from 3. You know, I'm impressed by the offensive game. I don't know if he's ever going to get a shot this year to really show it off, barring some injuries. And really, I think Edmund Sumner is still going to be ahead of him right now, and that could change, you know. Sumner's preseason looked awesome. I don't know what it looks in the regular season, but there's going to be some temptations and some push from either the front office or from even McMillan, kind of tempted to see what Holiday can do in the regular season, because he's a really dang good shooter. I mean, he can got that quick release. I mean, if he can catch fire, he does have the athleticism, I think, to be in offensively, at least. He moves well. Things like that I don't think Leaf had last year, and it's why he didn't play, but Aaron Holiday already has those things, and it seems like he should be able to play some minutes. But then again, this team has really four point guards, or three point guards, and a fourth guard in Oladipo, Oladipo, Evans, Kojo, and Collison. So I just don't know where the playing time comes from, but, you know, somebody gets hurt, who knows. I love him to get a little bit of a chance, at least to prove himself his first season. Obviously, really, as a rookie, you don't expect much. Doesn't have to play that much, not a big deal. But I love to see him kind of get a shot out there. Edmund Sumner, who has been kind of the highlight show of this preseason, only played 10 minutes, had a very minimal impact. Made one play, I think, if I remember right. Going to the rim, he made a nice kind of quick burst to get to the rim. I'm not sure he made the shot, but he at least showed off that athleticism. In terms of big minutes, guys, so you look at it, the main eight guys that were playing, Kojo obviously didn't play and Leaf didn't play. So the eight main guys played 20 minutes or more. So that meant Evans played 20 minutes, McDermott 21, Sabonis 21, Turner 21, Bogdanović Collins 23, and Young and Oladipo 29. It was probably kind of like the final tune-up for them. You know, I don't think they're going to struggle. You know, I don't see this game having an impact on how they play in the season, but I think they wanted to get them in the 20-minute range because it's a nice little tune-up. Shots just weren't falling for Oladipo at times. He hit his three-point shot pretty decently, but everything else seemed to kind of be a struggle to get. A couple two-point shots were short. The legs looked tired to me. And, you know, 6 days off, so he'll be fine for the season. I'm not worried about that. Oladipo, you know, he had this during the regular season where just some nights he just didn't have his legs under him because they had played three games in 5 minutes or things like that, and he'd just be exhausted. And he goes so hard that sometimes he sort of overexerts himself and doesn't have quite that burst in his legs you need, especially for a guy who jumps a ton like he does. The other guys, Bogdanović, Collison. Collison still hasn't made a three this preseason, which is kind of crazy. Same with Turner. Turner had one nice play, I think, where he posted Jabari Parker up and hit a nice little kind of hook shot, you know, off his back leg shot over him. Besides that, Turner again had a minimal impact. I thought Young and Sabonis were the most impactful players in terms of just they were all over the glass at times. Sabonis missed the shot a couple times, but he was trying to clean up missed shots from either Evans a couple times. And then Young would seem like he was all over the place cleaning up shots for Vic when he was missing. Those were the two best players, Sabonis at 13 and Young with the double-double at 16 and 10, including five offensive rebounds, which is pretty big. I think part of Young's stats are just an effort thing. He obviously hasn't played the preseason yet, so he has a desire to show off, I guess, to some extent. I think that's kind of not quite being super nice to him, but you know, or not giving him credit for what he's doing, but he was showing off a little bit because he hadn't played and kind of had to show, oh, listen, I'm still kind of a good player. And, you know, there have been concerns from this podcast and other is Young hitting sort of the that age where you see a sort of this little decline. You know, he's had a little bit of a decline in his overall points per game over the years. His minutes are still up there, but his points per games are down. So I wonder if we'd see a little bit of decline, but or we'd see some kind of injuries kind of play him as he gets into his 31-year-old season. But, you know, no concern there. Young looked fine. We were ready for the season. I was kind of concerned he maybe wouldn't be ready for the regular season, but I think he will, which can put the rest of the TJ Leaf probably playing any significant minutes. Leaf didn't play tonight. I don't know the reason for that. I think it was another injury. But overall, the game was a kind of dud in terms of the Pacers just weren't really ever in it. They went down 34-17 in the first quarter and really just couldn't get their way back. I think they cut it to maybe 12 in the second quarter for a split second. I forget the second or third quarter, but Leaf didn't play the calf injury, so that's what I meant to say. So overall, you know, I don't think it had a huge impact on this team, and it won't really matter going forward, so I just wouldn't be too worried if I were Pacer fans out there. The McDermott thing, I guess, is something to hit real quick, is that McDermott, again, really, they ran one really good play for him, but again, they're not really running much for him right now. I wonder if it's a disguise thing. I just don't think they're trying things out yet. I think to judge this team, you have to get in the regular season. On NBA Countdown, Stan Gundy made a good point, basically saying, will the kind of Vic does everything get kind of stale for this team? Do they have other things? And I don't know if that's all they're going to run. You know, if they continue just to run Vic pick and rolls or ISO Vic out, that will get stale for this team. It will not succeed at all because teams are already starting to figure it out and they will get better and better at it. But they just have so many different players that they should be able to run different kinds of pick and rolls off Turner, off Sabonis, with Evans at times. You know, with Oladipo as the point guard, Collison should be able to run those, and then you should be able to kind of do different things with McDonald's and McDermott kind of moving away from the ball and getting off-ball screens. So they should be able to run some unique or more dynamic things, I guess is the right way to say. It's worth noting that EK and Bo got in the game for a second and had two blocks. I wrote him off on yesterday's podcast that I think he's going to cut maybe this season or before the end of the roster spot or next season. We'll see. Well, I mean, I don't think he's on this team next year if I had to make an educated guess right now. But, you know, he's sort of a little bit of a flash. Ben Moore got 3 minutes in the game. They make an impact. Alizé got six and Elijah Stewart got six. We'll interesting to see how the team cuts down their roster. I would say Ben Moore has the edge for that last roster spot, and I would guess Stewart would get the two-way contract if I had to guess. But I can't be 100% sure on that, so we'll sort of see what happens. There might be somebody else out there they decide they want to be that two-way deal. I would bet Ben Moore gets the last spot on the team, though, if I had to make an educated guess today. Take another quick pause, and then we'll do the mailbag question. So I got this mailbag question while watching the Bulls-Pacer game from at AJ Reese, that's R-E-E-S-E, 1313. He said, with all the drama surrounding Butler and his value slowly declining, what do you think the Pacers should do? Leave it alone or maybe offer a lower package with a small chance of it working? I love talking Jimmy Butler speculation. I love talking trade speculation. That's what makes me kind of an NBA fan, an NBA fanatic, is just all the random nuanced trade stuff. I always try to push Tony towards it, and he always kind of ignored it sometimes, but I try my best to get him to do it. With this trade, I think at this point, Butler's not going to be traded until at least midseason. He's back with the team. He's going to play. Obviously, if the team succeeds, I don't see it. I mean, there's just too much stuff about Jimmy Butler said about Towns and Wiggins out there that I don't think it can succeed at this point. I think he's kind of burned those bridges. But unless the team is playing really well, I could see him being traded at the trade deadline. And I think what Minnesota is doing is they didn't get any great offers, which, you know, they weren't in a great leverage spot, and teams weren't really kind of changing the roster right now. So they said, screw it, we'll wait. And I think they're waiting to February to see a couple things. Are the Lakers going to be more of a mess or better than they think? And maybe they want to trade for Butler to put next to LeBron and have a chance of competing. I could definitely see that happening. You know, if it's a mess in LA, they're going to try to want to get somebody to make LeBron happy. If it's going kind of well and they think they're one piece away, is that what they do? And maybe they could steal. They're not going to get Brandon Ingram, obviously, for Jimmy Butler, but could they get maybe Kyle Kuzma or even Lonzo Ball, somebody like that? That would be at least a, like, decent give back. The other option, too, is, like, what happened with Boston? Maybe Boston decides they are one piece away from winning a championship and they decide Jaylen Brown is going to be good but isn't good enough to win this year and they can win this year. Do they flip Jaylen Brown for him? That could happen, too. I could see that working out, like a Brown and Marcus Smart kind of deal for him. Those are kind of the two. I mean, that's what they're looking at, right? Championship rosters. Maybe if Houston can figure out how to make the money work, they could do that. But I think they're just sort of waiting for the midseason and the leverage point. Because honestly, I think the Knicks, Nets, and Clippers, three teams who Butler had on his list, I think because he wants the 5-year, 190 deal. So Butler, big thing is he wants the ultimate money. He gets the top max. So he couldn't get with the Bulls. Obviously, the DNP, or DNE, sorry, designated player extension, DP, not DNP. DP, designated player extension. But he can still qualify for like a 5-year, 190 max. But the team has to have his bird rights. So that means if he signs in free agency with another team besides Minnesota, he loses those bird rights. So he wants to be traded. I think that's why he wants to be traded. I think Minnesota hesitant to give him a 5-year when deal. They offer him 4 years, 100, and he turned it down to get more money. You know, if he's a free agent, send anybody else, he signs a 4-year, 130, 140 deal, depending on what the cap is. But anyway, if he can get 5 years, 190, which is what he wants, he has to get traded at the trade deadline. His bird has to get moved to another team. So it makes sense that he put the Knicks, the Nets, and the Clips on his list because those are teams that will desperately overpay for a star like him because they want to be relevant again. And I could definitely see the Knicks, who are going to have probably a terrible start to their season because they have no Porzingis. I could see the Knicks flipping their future pick or something, making order to get Butler. Nets, I think, are a little more savvy, but who knows? And the Clippers could obviously do that at any point, especially if they think getting Butler is the key to getting somebody else. And they get, you know, I don't think it's going to be a great package for Butler, but it'll be something. In terms of the Pacers, when it comes around the trade deadline time, I could see them kind of making an offer, possibly. I mean, I think, why would they not? I think the trade deadline kind of gives them more opportunity to see Turner's bones together and pick one. They'll get 40 to begin with that, which maybe is enough sample size to decide what they fit together. And if they don't, then you can flip one for Butler. So, you know, I've been really encouraged by Sabonis' preseason. And let's say Turner comes out and he's good, but he's not great, doesn't make the leap you thought he would make. I could see Turner being flipped. Turner, and he would probably have to use Bogdanovich to make the salaries fit, or Joseph. You probably use Bogdanovich, or you can trade McDermott at the time, or Evans. You could do something like that, but I doubt they get rid of Evans. So I would probably see a trade that involved like McDermott, Turner. I think they would put the throw Kojo in, maybe something like that. They would do something like that to get Butler, and that would be sort of their move. And that would be the Pacers' move to basically become NBA finals relevant. I think if they get Butler on this team and they can not lose more than two rotation guys, so Turner, Sabonis, and somebody, they could make the NBA finals. I mean, that's how good I think a starting five of like Tyreke Evans, Victor Oladipo, Jimmy Butler, Thad Young, and whoever the center's left could be. So we'll see. And that's the offer. And I still think no matter what, they probably can't get Butler for just, you know, I would love they could just trade Bogdan Korjoseph for Jimmy Butler. I mean, I would do that 10 out of 10 times because you're basically trading your backup point guard who can replace with Evans and your small forward replacing with Butler. So I don't think they can get away with that. They could do that trade, that and a couple future firsts. You take that deal every day. But I don't know if that's on the table, if that will ever be on the table, or if Minnesota will ever accept that offer. But that's what I would see as a very low ball offer would be by Donovan Joseph, let's say, throwing two first-round picks, protected for the top 15, maybe top 10, you do, or top 12. That would really be a low-balling offer that they got accepted would be, like, the greatest thing ever. And, you know, that could be as, you know, when it comes, if the Lakers and the Knicks and the Nets and the Clippers and the Heat don't want to trade for Butler, that's where it could come down to. It could come down to that's their best offer. And if Butler just said, I'm out no matter what, they might accept that. Granted, Bogdanović and Joseph are free agents in this offseason, but they own the bird rights, then going into the luxury tax to pay. They own both their bird rights. Well, they own Bogdanović bird rights, but they can offer him 125% of his $10 million a year, so they offer him 12 and a half years max. But they have Joseph bird rights, so then go into the salary cap to pay for those guys. And granted, those two guys on the Timberwolves are like solid role players. I mean, they're both solid role players in the Pacers. They're two guys who fit kind of needs they have. Yeah, Minnesota gets that backup point guard and guy to play next to Teague at times, and they got Bogdanović who also can play next to Wiggins. If Wiggins plays the four, things like that, they get sort of two role players in it, but, you know, that's an asset. The first round picks, if they're in the 20s, don't mean anything, so I don't see Minnesota really doing that. But as a low ball offer, I would throw out there, if you could really do that, you should definitely do it. But I expect still, even in February, Minnesota to want Sabonis or Turner. Like I said, Locked On Pacers podcast. We are now up to 5 days a week. Tony will have a podcast tomorrow. I think he's previewing the back end of the roster. Tony and I will be back in on Monday. Until then, we'll see you. As always, you can follow Locked On Pacers podcast on Twitter at Locked On Pacers. You can follow me on Twitter at FriedmanAdam5. Follow my co-host Tony East at TEastMBA. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify. That is all for this Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, have a great rest of your day.